Yo, 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 yo! Welcome to episode number 100. We did it! It took us 8 years, but we did it. Welcome to episode number 100. I am your host, Adam, the Real 27 guy, and today's episode is brought to us by PWCC. 2003 Exquisite Limited Logos Kobe Bryant, a LeBron SPX rookie, a 94 Finest MJ Refractor in a PSA 10, and my favorite, an 05 Finest Gold LeBron. I believe that's numbered out of 39. All of them end this Sunday at the PWCC Weekly Auction. Guys, I can't believe that we made it to 100 episodes. It kind of snuck up on me. I didn't really realize it. I should have realized it. I know a lot of places do, like, celebrations or whatever. I'll just tell you guys just a few quick stats that I wrote down as I was preparing for this. So it's been almost exactly 100 months since I started the podcast, which means that I do about one episode a month, which is funny because I think genuinely I could probably do an episode every day and enjoy it, but there's just not enough time. And I don't know that you guys would want it, but there's so many good things to do, and I've always sort of thought that it would be great to do a daily podcast, but I can barely make it happen once a month, and so there's just so many things. You know, the other thing that I'll tell you about that that's kind of interesting, so I did a video last Thursday, a video for Leland's and some cards that they have up. So that video has been up for 5 days. It has over 200,000 views. In the history of the Basketball Card Podcast, we have 82,200 plays. For me, I have just found that I have more effective ways to share my voice than how I've been able to do via podcast. But there are enough of you who message me and say, hey, where's your next episode? And, oh, I love the episode that I've kept doing it. And here's the thing is I do genuinely love doing it, too. I really do. I've loved doing it. And so we've kept it going. We started in 2016, again, almost exactly 100 months ago, and 82,200 plays. It has been a blast. When I started, there wasn't another card podcast that I knew of, but I would listen to Bill Simmons and David Locke, who is now of the Locked On Basketball, or Locked On Sports or Podcast Network. And I would listen to those guys like all the time. I loved it. When I discovered podcasts, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I thought that wouldn't it be cool if there was a show like that specifically for cards? I tried to figure out how to start a podcast. I like Googled, searched, you know, everything that you needed to start. And I got one up there and then nobody listens to it at all. I think the first several episodes, I would be lucky if I got it to like 50 or 100, listeners. And I was doing everything I could to get people to subscribe. At that point, I was so big on the Blowout forums, and I was like trying to figure out ways to talk about my podcast in a way where I wasn't obviously self-promoting, but I totally was, which is a rule against the forums. And so it was such a crazy time back in 2016 when we started. And I hoped that other people would start the podcast, and it took years. Like, nobody did one for years. And then people started doing them, and when people started doing them, it went crazy. We had a few people who started, I think, a few years after me. And then after that, like, there have been dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of sports card podcasts that have come out since then. But it was hard to get people to listen, and then it took off, and it was crazy when it took off. There was a time where I had a friend whose name's Tony. I don't know if he still listens to the podcast, but he's a big Laker fan, and he's a guy who I've known for a long time. And I told him, I was like, hey, you should check this out. And he was like, why? He just sort of didn't seem like he really got it or cared or whatever. And then he listened to it, and he messaged me a few years later, and he said, I want to thank you because until you told me about your podcast, I didn't really know that podcasts were a thing. And now I spend my entire day like listening to podcasts. And I think that's kind of the arc for a lot of us, right? Is you like find one that you really like, and then you go, oh, wait a second, this is amazing. And especially depending on what kind of job you have, you may have the ability to just listen a ton. Back when I was working in accounting all the time, I had all the time in the world to listen to podcasts. Now I don't. now I'm making the content rather than listening to it, and there's not that much time to consume it for me. I spend a lot of time making content, which I really like. In fact, I love it, but I miss not being able to listen to as much. Anyway, guys, it has been a ton of fun. And to those of you who have messaged me over the years saying, hey, when's the next one coming out? Or to those of you who have messaged me saying, hey, I went on a 12-hour road trip, just me, and I ended up listening to you the entire 12 hours. Like, I've had so many of these types of messages over the years, and I thank you. Who knew that my career would actually become sports card content full-time? That's all I do. It's all I do full-time. It's all I've done full-time basically for the last couple of years now, and I love it. So with all of that said, thank you for listening to the first 100 episodes of the Basketball Card Podcast. And now that I've given you this long intro, I want to get into what today's episode is about, which is ironically not about basketball cards. Today I want to talk about, I've talked about this before, don't stop listening, okay? Don't stop listening. Today I want to talk more about Harry Potter cards. Why Harry Potter cards? Well, let me tell you about my collecting arc for Harry Potter a little bit in this first segment. And then in the next couple segments, I think you'll see why I'm connecting it to basketball cards and why I feel good about putting it here on the podcast. Not because I think you should collect Harry Potter cards, because I only think you should collect what you like, but because there are some interesting things to learn here. I'll get into that in a little bit, but go with me here to the punchline first. So in 2022, I went crazy with Harry Potter cards. It all started when Instagram user Yamwax put something on his profile about Harry Potter cards. And I've never made it a secret. I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. I've been a huge Harry Potter fan for a long time. And so are my kids, my whole family is, but I'm absolutely a huge fan of the books, huge fan of the movies, huge fan of everything that is Harry Potter. I actually got introduced to the story first, I think right before I went on my mission to the very first movie, and I thought it was kind of dumb. And then in England, saw a bunch of stuff about Harry Potter and then came home, still thought it was dumb. And then years later, I was already married, the sixth movie came out, and I watched it with my wife, and we both got really interested. Long story short, ended up watching all the movies a million times, reading the books several times, and absolutely loved it. With all that said, in 2022, I discovered these autographs because of Yamwax, and I went out, guys, and I went nuts. Like, I spent so much money and so much time on pursuing knowledge and the cards, and specifically the autographed art box cards. And I even did a couple episodes, at least one episode here on the Basketball Card Podcast about these cards and why I was so excited about them. And I really enjoyed them. And I bought most of them. I had almost all of the Hermione autographs. I think I was missing two of the nine. I had all 10 of the Harrys. I had almost all of the Rons. I call the actors by their character name rather than their actual name. Sometimes I call them their actual name too, but the one that I really wanted all along was the Triple Auto, which was probably the card in my collecting career that was like the hardest card for me to find that I eventually found. And then after I found it, I ironically had a couple of other chances to acquire it, but didn't buy any of those ones, just bought the first one. And then subsequently when I bought the Kobe Logo Man auto, I sold a bunch of them, and I sold a bunch of the other ones since then. But what I've done is I've kept, and this is like a common theme for me, is I've kept the best ones, right? So I have the Triple Auto, which is just an amazing card and an impossible card to find. I kept the very first Harry autograph, which came out of the Prisoner of Azkaban set. I think he signed it when he was 14. Same thing with the first Hermione. I also have the Quad, which is from the Goblet of Fire and has all four of the Triwizard Champion autographs, as well as pieces of their uniform or their costume. I kept the second Hermione autograph. I kept the duel with Sirius and Harry, the duel with Draco and Harry. And that might be it. It's like seven total cards. And they're all autographed cards, and then the quad is autographed and costume. But I had had before that, you know, a couple of other dozen cards, other Harrys, and you know, watched those things change in value. I think they mostly went up. I think I did pretty well on them from a financial perspective, which is funny because it's not actually what I was ever endeavoring to do. I didn't think I would ever sell a lot of those things. I thought I would just keep them. But as they popped up more and more, the thing that was clear to me was, like, these are really cool, but there are, like, actually a fair number of a lot of them. And even the ones that there's only 50 or 100 of, if you're seeing them sell once every 6 months or every 3 months, like, to me, that just wasn't as interesting. I like cards that almost never move. And so in the middle of all of this, I sort of realized that there were more than just the autographs to collect. There were prop cards and costume cards and insert cards and all of these things from the Art Box days. Art Box was the company who Warner Brothers contracted with to create all of the official Harry Potter cards. And so I sort of started to get interested in them even as I was collecting all of these autographs. And let's take our first break there, and I'll tell you more in a second.
Do you grade your cards? Grading can preserve, protect, and beautify your cards. Well, maybe not all grading companies beautify the cards they grade, but CGC sure does. CGC slabs are so much nicer than the other big three that I send all of my PC cards to them for slabbing. Not only do they make the cards look amazing, but they are ultra durable. I used to think that a slab could only be super clear or super strong, but then CGC showed up. Check them out at cgccards.com today.
So as I was collecting all of the autographs, I realized that I maybe even liked some of the other cards more. And it was specifically the prop cards. What's a prop card? Well, you know what a prop is in a movie, right? Somebody's holding a book, or there's something that's essential to the story that thing can be made. And then in the case of Harry Potter, they've taken a lot of those and they've basically cut those things up and they've made them into cards. Just the same way that you would see like a basketball patch card or a piece of a shoe or piece of a shoelace or something like that. For some movies, they've taken parts of the movie and they've cut those things up and they've put them into cards. And where I love those movies so much, it was kind of amazing to me that they made them into cards. The other thing that I liked is that they feel more, this is not a perfect corollary, but they felt more like rare basketball inserts and parallels than the autographs did. This isn't meant to be a negative thing about the autographs. I've kept all of the best ones, so clearly I still really enjoy them and find unbelievable merit in and of themselves, right? I've had a chance to move all of them and haven't, and I think, I want to say this the right way, I don't believe I'll ever sell any of the autographs that I have left. I've kept them because I like them a lot. I think I like the prop cards in general more. And the reason is that, like I said, they're from the movies. What's cooler, to own a piece of a prop that you've seen in one of the most watched movies ever made, or an autograph from the person who played that person, who played that character, and they sign, you know, hundreds of autographs or whatever. Like, I think the prop is cooler. Now, compare that to basketball. If I have a chance to own a piece of a jersey of a player or an autograph of the player, it's different. It's different than the Harry Potter thing, because there are so many jerseys that can be worn, especially amongst modern day players, whereas the prop is used once and that's it, right? So, you know, Michael Jordan jerseys, there probably aren't as many of those, but you can get a lot of pieces out of them. Whereas, you know, something that's used in the Harry Potter movies, like, for example, one of the magical creatures that's in the film, the mandrakes. There's only really one scene with the mandrakes, and that those were like cut up and put into cards. Like, that's it. That's all of them that you get. Now, I'm not some like giant fan of the mandrakes from Harry Potter, but if I was, I could easily make the case that a piece of those is a lot cooler than, say, like one of the autographs of one of the people from that scene, because those guys have signed so many autographs. Again, they didn't sign that many under the, you know, under the official, you know, Warner Brothers art box Harry Potter label, and so there's still something amazing about the autographs. But I just think it's really cool that you can have a part of like this really key moment in this really important movie production or this movie series. So, you know, there's some similarities there and there's some differences. The other sort of similarities when it, as it sort of comes to like, or why they're more like rare basketball inserts or parallels than say autographs, is that they almost never pop up. There are some of the rare prop cards that I'll get into here in the third segment, and rare costume cards that you never see hit auction. When I say never see, I mean I've been doing it for 2 years now, and some of them have never come to auction, ever. Some of them, there's no historical record for what they've sold for. Some of them are really low numbered. Some of them aren't super low numbered, but they just still hardly ever move. And some of them have grown so much in value, very similar to some of those basketball inserts, that even like the collectors that are like the most dedicated, a lot of them have sort of thought about moving on from the cards. A lot of these prop cards, in fact, I think all of them are serial numbered. They're serial numbered to random amounts. Some of them are numbered as low as like 40, and some of them are numbered into the thousands, especially the costume cards. There's really like, there's like a delineation between prop cards and costume cards in Harry Potter. And some of the costume cards are numbered really high. Like, I think there's some that are like 2,000. Certainly there's several that are in the four figures. But most of the prop cards are to like hundreds, or, and then there's some that are even sub 100. Just like the world of inserts and parallels, the rarer the prop card is, typically the more sought after it is. But there are some that are higher numbered that are really sought after. The best example that I have of this one is the Sorcerer's Stone. So if you go back and you look at the first book, first movie, which was known as the Philosopher's Stone in Britain, and the Sorcerer's Stone, I think everywhere else, but certainly here in America, you look at the, you watch the movie, and there's this little red stone that they used for, that's especially shown toward the end of that movie. Harry gets the Sorcerer's Stone by looking in the Mirror of Erised, and that stone Voldemort wants so that he can live forever. And that stone, Art Box was able to acquire, and after the movie was made, and basically break it into 265 teeny tiny little pieces. Those little pieces were then put, like, embedded in a card. And when we say embedded, it's interesting how they did it. They basically took two sides of the cardboard with the space in between, like we're used to seeing with like big patch cards. You know how like the giant patch cards, you'll see like, you can see from looking at the side how thick it is. And then when you look into it, you can sort of see, oh, I can see how much space they had to reserve within these different layers of the card to fit the jersey patch. That's the exact same thing with all these Harry Potter cards. Except for, you know, these were made between 2004 and like 2009. And so it was like a rudimentary, like sort of older, you know, style of doing it. Some of them don't look awesome. Some of them, you can see a lot of white in the background. I guess that's true of some patch type cards too, but it's not always designed in a way that's like super artistic. It's more sort of thought of as like the vehicle for getting you that piece from the stories or that piece from the film. And so the Sorcerer's Stone, what they did is they took the pieces of cardboard, they left that like open area in between the different area in between the different levels. And then there's a piece of plastic that goes on top of the stone piece, the little piece of the rock, and or like it's like a ruby color, and then it goes underneath the highest part of the cardboard, and it's pulled really tight, so you can't actually touch the stone. In this case, you could touch like the plastic that's on top of the stone. That makes sense. You can see the stone, and it's obviously there, and it's cool, but you can't touch it. Conversely, there are pieces of wands that were cut up and put into cards where you can actually touch the wand because the wand is actually glued straight onto that back white piece. Sometimes the wand fills the majority of that area. Sometimes there's a lot of the area left because some parts of the wand are wider and some parts of the wand are really thin. And there's lots of pieces that are like that, that are kind of different. I like that you have this element of like really rare props and these ones that aren't rare, because you can, if you wanted to like buy something as like a newer collector, like, I've got kids that like different, you know, actors or different characters. Like I can get them a Hagrid piece of like his outfit for like $30, which, you know, is still not cheap. For a lot of people, that's still a ton of money. But it's sort of manageable, right? Like, okay, I can get a piece of what Hagrid wore for $30. But then some of the bigger pieces that are really rare, like there's this like super high dollar figure associated with it. But what I really like about it is because none of them have moved publicly in a long time and there's like no public record, the knowledge around what the stuff is worth is really hard to find. I love it when you can find a collectible like that. In general, I don't want my best collectibles to have tons of sales data. Why? I just like knowing that I could own something that most other people have no way of getting, even if they had all the money in the world. To me, that's a recipe for like good things to happen, good potential like future value gains. But also, like, I hate seeing my stuff sell over and over and over again. And I've seen that with some of my best cards, and that's sort of frustrating. Outside of the props and the costume cards, there's also, I want to mention this too. One thing that's different about these than the inserts is a lot of the key prop cards were not included in packs, but were only available if you bought packs. Let me explain what this means. So when these products were coming out, the mechanism that Artbox had of getting people to buy more and more cases is they created an incentive program. The incentive was if you bought X number of cases, you could get a certain card. So you wouldn't ever pull the card out of the pack. That card would just be sent to you by Artbox. The best example of this is from the Sorcerer's Stone product. Sorcerer's Stone product came out in 2005, actually after Prisoner of Azkaban. And you've probably seen the Sorcerer's Stone, right? Like everybody's seen it. It's one of the most watched movies of all time. The very first in the Harry Potter series. And one of the key scenes of the whole movie is when Harry and Hagrid get to they get to the train station and Hagrid has to leave Harry real quick. And Hagrid hands Harry a ticket. He hands him his ticket to get on the train, which is interesting because the ticket They never ask for it. It's not like it's some really significant part afterwards. But you remember Hagrid says, stick to it, Harry, stick to your ticket. He hands it to him right before that. On the movie, you see it. They show the ticket for like 2 to 3 seconds. And then Hagrid's gone when Harry looks up. But you've been looking at this ticket for 2 or 3 seconds. And it says platform 9 3/4. And it says, you know, there's a bunch of other different writing on it, and there's some gold foil, and there's like all this sort of fancy stuff, and you see that. Well, Artbox was able to acquire that ticket, and they cut it into 40 pieces, 8x5, and then they made 40 cards, but they did not include these cards in packs. The only way you could get this one of these cards was if you bought 50 cases, not boxes, 50 cases of product. I think there's 12 boxes in a case. We're talking about 600 cases of, or 600 boxes of product that you had to be responsible for to be able to acquire that card. Well, I believe that 40 of them were made, but if you go out and you try to find images of these cards, I think there's only one publicly available on like the entire internet. There's one. There's a lady named Anna who put together these collections back 10 years ago or something. I don't think there's any way to contact her. She's got a Juno email address that no longer works. You can look her up online. Literally just like Google Harry Potter art box platform 9¾ ticket. You'll find one image. It'll take you to her website where you can see all of the old prop cards, all the old costume cards, all the old autographs. She had everything, or at least she had images of everything. But they're all like, this is a decade old, this website is. And she moved it over from some other place where she had it before then. I don't know if there's any sign of her since then. I don't know if she's around, if she's alive. I don't know any of that. What I do know is that these cards that she shows off here, like there's only that one 9¾ ticket. And it's cool because you can look at it, you can line up where it goes to on the ticket. You can't see the serial number because she hasn't shown that, but she writes in the notes what serial number it is. And it's just amazing because it's just like how we try to like line up pieces of patch on a jersey. You can kind of do that with the ticket, with the piece of the ticket. It's also amazing because it's not, and this is where it's different. You couldn't pull it. You could only get it by buying all of those cases. So I sort of sat and wondered, like, how do people see that? Like, how do people perceive, like, is that a cool thing? Is that not a cool thing? I kind of wish they were just straight into the packs. But what I like about it is it made it so people who really wanted a chance to get the biggest cards, like, got them. And a lot of people basically put these collections together. Like, they were real completionists. They wanted to own all of the Harry Potter cards. So if you wanted to own all the Sorcerer's Stone cards, you had to get this out of 49¾ ticket. And for you to get that, you probably already had everything else that you needed. But then what that means is that those cards never get separated from those collections. Most of those cards stay with those collections, and that sort of explains why we never see them at auction. I wanted to say one thing about this card. I had one chance to acquire this card back when I first started doing the Harry stuff. And so this was probably like, it's probably like March or April of 2022. And this is so similar to like a sports card story, but I saw somebody had listed a lot of Harry Potter stuff. And I looked at the lot and I was just interested in autographs at this point. And I didn't even really know very much about the prop cards. But I saw in the props, like you always notice the serial number, right? Like that's pretty easy to understand. And so I was like looking for deals, trying to find like, because you can always find deals on lots, right? So I found this lot and it had like a box of Harry Potter retail cards and had a couple of other things in it. It had a couple of prop cards. And they were both really rare prop cards. One of them was the ticket out of 40. And then another one of them was a letter from Sirius that's numbered out of 50. And those are like two of the rarest prop cards. And the minimum bid on it was $1,000. And I was like, man, that feels like that's a really good deal. But I didn't have a lot of money at the time because I'd been spending money like crazy on those Harry Potter autographs. And so I saw this lot and I was like, gosh, should message the guy. So I messaged the guy. I think it was a lady actually. And I messaged him and I was like, hey, you know, would you have any interest in selling just this 9¾ ticket on its own? And I think it was a she. I think she said, you know what? I really thought this a lot would sell for $1,000. If it doesn't sell, then I'll just break it up and see how I can do then. And you're welcome to bid on, you know, the ticket. And I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And so I waited for the end. Nobody bid on it. And I was like, see, I knew you should have just sold me this ticket. But she broke it up. I was like, okay, I'll watch this. Well, pretty quickly, the ticket got a bid on it. And then pretty quickly, it had like several more. And then it was like way higher. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was way higher than like the whole cost of the lot. Like, I think the ticket got up to like $4,000 in the first couple days. And I was like, dang it. Why didn't I just buy it? And then you start going, well, you didn't really know, and maybe this bid activity isn't real. But it's easy to see how somebody wouldn't have seen that it was a ticket from the outside of the lot to begin with. And then once it was listed on its own, you were able to see that it was the ticket. If memory serves, I think it sold for like $8,000. I can't find any public record of it at this point. I've looked through my email, I can't find it on there. So that might be wrong, but that's kind of what I remember. I remember it sat at 4 for a long time, and it went to either like 6 or 7 or 8, something like that. But that's the only time one has publicly sold in the last 2 years. And there's lots of cards that are like the ticket, And I want to get into those in a second. Before I've got this in my notes. I want to make sure I say this. Inserts are weird in the world of the Harry Potter art box stuff because a lot of them are just like box toppers. They call them box toppers or case toppers. You like get them on top of the case, or I don't know if they're in the packs or probably on top of the box in the packs is probably what they are. But they're just not very rare. The case toppers, some of them are numbered or limited to like 100 or 200. They don't sell for very much. They're kind of cool. Most of them are lenticular. You can find them for like, I posted some on my Instagram. You can find them for like as little as like $10 for some of them. Some of the rarer ones are like 50 to 100 bucks, but they're just not, they're not expensive. They are really cool, but they're just not expensive. And then there aren't really other inserts that are really like super sought after, at least that I've been able to see. They're all sort of like, you know, you can buy the whole set for $20 to $100, that sort of thing. But they just didn't make really rare high-tech sort of inserts like jambalayas or PMGs. They didn't do anything like that. I wish they would have in retrospect. The hits definitely were like the autographs and the prop cards.
You've probably heard about Alt, but have you registered for their auction yet? Twice a month, Alt features its Liquid Auctions event, which caters to collectors of all kinds. The platform is super easy to use, connects to your bank in minutes, and provides a super fun bidding experience. What are you waiting for? Register on AltXYZ today.
Man, you guys can tell I just get going and sometimes I cannot shut up. But I love talking about this stuff. And I hope that this is interesting for some of you guys. I know a huge percentage of people stopped listening to this one early on. But I find this stuff really interesting. And I find my mind's very caught up in it right now. And so this is a good way for me to be able to share some of the things that I've been thinking. And again, hope you enjoy it. So this third segment, I just have titled Coolest Cards. I still think that the triple autograph is easily the coolest Harry Potter card that's out there. The fact that all three of them signed the card when they were as young as they were, there's as few of them as there are. I wish it was serial numbered, obviously, but like to me, that's one of the coolest cards in the world across all different types of cards. People are like, wouldn't you rather have a triple autograph of blah, 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 and they'll mention three basketball players? And the answer to me is like, no. No, they didn't make hardly any of these. They only made the card once. They're completely connected forever. And the fact that they signed it when it did, like to me, it's honestly, it's like, it's either that, like in my collection, it's a top three coolest card. It's that, the Larry Bird USA autograph patch and the first Logo Man auto of Kobe Bryant. Like those to me are the three coolest cards that I own from like a historical sort of perspective. I guess you can get into other things that are really cool, but the triple auto is one of the coolest cards out there, but this is an episode that's mostly about props and costume cards. So I would say this, the triple auto is the coolest one, but I do think some of the prop cards are actually harder to get your hands on. And I say that because we've seen a few times the triple auto has moved. We just haven't seen some of these other cards sell. So the platform 9 3/4 tickets, I would say it's probably the best one. It's because I don't think that ticket should have been cut up. I think that ticket should have lived in a museum somewhere forever. That 40 people can own a piece of that, to me, is like one of the coolest things in the world. And the fact that nobody has like talked about it or done stories on it, like to me, that's... Like, I did a story on my Instagram on it the other day, and I had so many different people sort of message me, like, how come we don't hear about things like this? And you know, before I continue the list, what I would say about this is, like, if I was in charge of, if I had real authority at a place like Fanatics, I think this is an incredibly untapped market. Movies and movie franchises that have beloved... like beloved stories and that are like every great movie should have its own card product. They should have base cards that reflect on the individuals that are in the movie. There should be key scenes from the movie. There should be rare inserts that sort of correlate to the movie, pieces of props and costumes from the movie, and autographs. And they should come in quantities that are rare enough that they'll always have interest. Like that should be a thing. And so with that said, like, when I think about things like the platform 9 3/4 ticket, if we would have known back when the movie came out in, I think, 1999 or 2000, that Harry Potter was going to be what it was going to be and viewed culturally as important as it was, I don't think there's any chance that ticket gets cut up and put into carts. Like, there's nothing in sports cards that's that cool. I'm sorry, there's not. There's no piece of uniform that I can look at and be like, oh, that's from this thing. Like, there's nothing that's as iconic. There's not. There are, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that these Harry Potter cards should be worth more or that they're cooler. I'm saying that there's nothing that's like, there's no like iconic pieces. Like, you're not going to see Jordan's shoes from his last game on a card. You're going to see Jordan shoe cards and you're going to see Jordan jersey cards. But they're like from random games. Like, this is from a key moment in a movie that has like been seen by everybody. You know, everybody has seen that thing. The Sorcerer's Stone's maybe even a better example. Like, they cut that up and they put it into a card? What? It's insane. Okay. So there are also all of the letters that you see throughout the movie. Sometimes they don't show the letters. Like, you'll see them reading from the letter, but a lot of times they don't know when they're filming what pieces will actually get put into the movie and what won't. And so they'll actually write out the letter and have it signed and you know, by the person who's writing it. And then they'll take that letter and they'll read from it in the movie. Sometimes they zoom in on it, sometimes they don't. But then they took those letters. There's a number of really cool ones. The letter that Harry gets that takes him to Hogwarts for the first time. The letter that Hagrid gets, the secret letter that, you know, he opens when he gets into the vault. The letter in the second Harry that is from Hogwarts that's to all the kids. Like, there's so many of those pieces of paper that have been cut up. But a lot of them aren't shown, right? And so you just see, like, the letter come in, you see it from afar, but you can't see the writing. There's things like, I mentioned the Sorcerer's Stone, 265 pieces. There's things like Ron's compass, other books, cages, cauldrons, Hermione cauldron that she uses to make Polyjuice potion in the second film. I said earlier that the 9 3/4 ticket's the coolest. I think it probably is the coolest, but there's also the wands from the Goblet of Fire in the update set. So if you bought, I want to say, make sure I say this the right way, I think it's 20, it's either 25 or 40 cases of that product, you could get a wand card from one of the Triwizard champions. And so the wand card would be like a Harry out of 28, Crumb out of 28, Fleur Delacour out of 28, or Cedric Diggory out of 28. They're all serial numbered at 28. And the wands are really cool because they're not just like a stick. Like, there's some parts of them are just like sticks, but sometimes they have like a base that's like very artistic. And so there's like different parts of those that are really cool. Some people might take a wand card over the platform 9 3/4. I think I'd take maybe Harry's wand out of 28, but still the fact that the ticket is from the Sorcerer's Stone, I think I'd take the ticket over any of the wand cards. I think that. Maybe I would change my mind if I thought about that. But Ron has a compass from the second movie that is in that makes it into one of the sets that's numbered out of less than 100. You got all the crazy things like the Monsters Book of Monsters. There's things that are like, that you would think are largely CGI, that some of them are part CGI and they have some physical components. Like, for example, Fluffy from the Sorcerer's Stone. That's the giant three-headed dog. I thought that whole thing was CGI, but I guess some parts of like him weren't, like his giant paw. So they were able to make like 600 pieces out of Fluffy. In the Order of the Phoenix movie, there's the scene with the Death Eaters where they come in and they all have like metal face, like masks. They cut those masks up, which is super crazy and super cool. They got like between 90 and 100 out of some of them. And then I think in one of the other sets, they have like 130 out of some of the masks. But those ones, those things like that, where you're like, oh, I remember seeing that in the movie. I remember that moment. Fox's feathers from the Chamber of Secrets. Professor Lockhart's book from the Chamber of Secrets. Like, all of those things are really cool. The other thing that I was going to say about these is that, so most of these came out of PAX, right? And some of them came as incentives. Like Hermione's Cauldron, I think it's to 130, maybe it's 160. That only came if you bought a certain number of cases, like 5 cases or something of that product. But some of them, like the Sorcerer's Stone, I think was directly in PAX. And it's like a super thick card. So I wonder if you would have been able to, you probably would have been able to feel it at that time. But the craziest prop cards that are also like super low numbered weren't related to, as far as I understand it, they weren't related to the actual products. They were made sort of specially for Comic-Con events. Like there's like a San Diego Comic-Con, I think. So I think I'm saying that right. Where specific cards, that was the only place you could get them. And they included like some really rare prop cards, like some prop cards that would come in these special boxes and they would have like these crazy patches on them and they'd be like numbered to 7. And I know there's like, you can get the checklist for most of these on NS lists. That's where you can get a lot of the checklist data from NS lists. I think it's nslists.com or .org or something like that. You can find like some of the checklists of some of these rare prop cards, but I kind of don't know how I feel about them because they weren't connected to the original offering. It's a little bit like, imagine Panini comes out with like this product and everybody loves it. And then in the middle of the year, they're like, we're just going to auction off these 5 cards that are not on any checklist. They don't look totally like it. They're not connected to the product, but it is a really cool piece from Victor Crumb's, you know, his outfit or whatever. So I don't love that stuff, but a lot of people do. And they're some of the craziest cards. You know, the last thing that I want to say, the last note that I have written down here, first off, I apologize. This has been so long and I've been all over the place, but I've had so many questions that I wanted to get them all out. I wanted to get out like all my thoughts in one place. And now I can point people to this episode. So, the thing that I love about the Harry Potter stuff that is hard to sort of explain until you're really seeking for it is that most of the cards from the Harry Potter art box series, and I think there's 17 sets. All the movies have a set, most of the movies have an update set, and then there's like other sets called like Memorable Moments and 3D. I think there's 16 or 17 total sets. A lot of people who were collecting these cards were completionists. They like loved Harry Potter, the films. And so they tried to get everything. And they would put everything that they could together in the same collection. So in sports cards, we'll see like, oh, I can see this person pulled this Jambalaya and they put it in their holder and then they had it forever. Well, in Harry Potter, they were like, I need to get all the Jambalayas. I need to get all the prop cards. And a lot of these people spent a crap ton of money back then. And they had everything. I think that's cool because it's very unlikely that you're going to find the 9 3/4 ticket in some random collection. It's very unlikely that you're going to find a wand out of 28 of Fleur in a random collection. You may find several things together. You may find some of the big cards all in the same place. You're not going to find one-offs like that. You're just not. You might, like, with, like, a card like the Sorcerer's Stone, where there's 265 of them, or 285. You're not going to with the really big, rare cards. There were a lot of Harry Potter completionists. You know, but the cards started coming out 20 years ago. They came out between 15 and 20 years ago now. They rarely hit auction. A lot of times they sit on like just high buy it nows. And then when they do hit auction, they do pretty well because there's so many people who are looking for them. But unlike sports cards where you have like all of these things that move that sort of generate upward trajectory in prices, there's so little of this stuff out there that you don't see as much of that. When I say little, there's a few hundred prop cards, right? There's like so many different kinds of prop cards. There's so many different kinds of costume cards. Seriously, I think if I haven't counted, but I'll bet you between all the sets, between all costume and all prop cards, there's probably, this is just a guess, there's probably 300, there's probably 300 to 400 cards. I might be high or low on that. I'd be surprised if it was more than like 450 or 500. I think that's probably right though, probably between 300 and 400. There's so many of them, but like the average one of them is numbered to, you know, a few hundred, and that's it. That's it. So if you want to own, you know, one of those types of things, like that's all you get. And so since they hardly ever pop up, they don't have as strong of this like positive pricing trend that you see on other things. And they don't, there's no like website out there that tracks this sort of stuff. There's no like, this is what the Harry Potter nine and three quarters ticket has sold for before. I don't know anybody who has any of that data. I like that data doesn't exist. I like that the cards never move. To me, that is really an interesting thing. And so I've totally gotten into it. I've bought a bunch of stuff. I've bought like a ton of stuff, guys. And I really find myself enjoying it a lot. And I find myself always sort of gravitating towards areas that are really cool, and a lot of people don't know that it's really cool. Now, there's a good chance that there's just not ever going to be like, even though Harry Potter's like one of the most followed stories ever, I don't know that there's ever going to be card collectors of this stuff. I was talking to a friend the other day. It's been a couple weeks ago now. And he was telling me, like, he's like, if I was into Harry Potter, I would probably just want to own the books. And I was like, you know what? I think that makes sense because it was a story in the beginning. I think that's right. I think a lot of people would just want the books. But like, I'm a card collector. I love cards and I love rare cards. And I love it when cards are made in a way that like they take some real chances and do some things that are really different. And so I feel that way right now about these rare prop cards. I don't have all of them that I'd like to. There's a lot more that I'd like to get. And I'm going to keep looking for them and trying to find the ones that I want to. I hope to see some more of them hit auction, though. If you know anybody who has any of the really rare stuff or know any resources that I haven't mentioned here on this podcast, I would love to see, I'd love to hear from you. You know, even if you're listening to this, it's March 6th, 2024 as I record this. If you're listening to this in a couple years even, because there's just not the content out there, there's no data. Other than NS lists and Anna's website, like there just is not a lot of stuff out there. Go out to Blowout, go out to historical auctions. There is nothing, guys. Like it just doesn't exist, especially on the props. I can't find a prop, a single prop that is moved at like public auction amongst one of the auction houses. How crazy is that? How crazy is it that the PWCC has never sold a Harry Potter prop card? Not one. Isn't that nuts? Like there's thousands of them. They've never sold one. Some of them sell for incredible amounts of money. The lowest end ones sell for like $30 or $40, and they never sell like at public auction. You'll just see a few of them hit eBay here and there. Anyway, I'll stop talking about it now. Thank you guys for joining this week. Reminder, check out everything that I've got going on my Instagram, daily content, lots of stuff that is all educational and about things in the history of the hobby. It's all far better organized than I've been here on this episode. 100 episodes, guys. Crazy. Just crazy. We're going to keep them rolling. Thank you guys for all of your support. And until next time, happy collecting. Thanks for listening to the Basketball Card Podcast. Reminder to subscribe to Basketball Card Fanatic Magazine at bcfmag.com. Remember to use discount code BASKETBALL10 for 10% off any item in the store. That's bcfmag.com.